Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, November 7th, 2024. Marfa Council Members Tackle Hot Grants, City Manager Opening by Mary Cantrell. MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. Marfa City Council members met last week to distribute the first round of Hotel Occupancy Tax, HOT, grants, and to schedule interviews for the city manager position. All council members were present, with the exception of Mark Cash. Citizens representing local cultural organizations first spoke in support of their HOT grant applications. Grants are awarded in the fall and the spring. Applications for the next round of funding open in March 2025. Council members then heard funding recommendations from the HOT grant committee, which includes Mayor Manny Baeza, Mayor Pro Tem Raul Lara, and Tourism Director Jennifer Connors. The committee is appointed by the City Council and is comprised of representatives from local tourism, arts, and preservation fields, as well as Marfa citizens, according to the city's website. Per state law, HOT revenue must be spent on promoting tourism activities. The majority of locally collected HOT funds go towards the overall Tourism and Convention Center budget, which pays for salaries, USO building maintenance, advertising, and more. This year, the city budgeted to receive $745,000 in HOT revenue, up from $700,000 the previous year. Of that projected revenue, $35,000 was allocated for arts and culture promotion, $51,000 for historic preservation events, $20,000 for advertising, and $12,000 for sports event promotion. The council also budgeted $80,000 for the historic preservation of buildings. Line items for arts and culture promotion and advertising have remained the same for the past 3 years. Baeza explained that $17,500, half of the arts and culture budget line item, had to be spread across entities this grant cycle. He explained that the HOT grant coffers, particularly for advertising reimbursements, were low due to the fact that the city is spending money on upgrading its own facilities for the public, a similar situation as last year. It's been brought to our attention that they're asking why we don't have more money for advertising grants, but right now we just spent $200,000 on the restrooms out at the USO building. We're fixing up the MAC building, Baeza said. We're trying to outfit Marfa with two very nice venues for people to use for all of these events. Council members voted unanimously to approve the recommendations as presented. The Marfa 100 will receive around $6,000 for sports event promotion and advertising reimbursement. The Marfa and Presidio County Museum will receive $10,000 for historic preservation. The Tenati Foundation will receive $10,000 for Tenati Weekend and $7,000 in arts and culture promotion and advertising reimbursements for a project with intertribal noise. The Marfa Chamber of Commerce requested $22,500 and was awarded $6,000 for three separate events from the Arts and Culture Fund. In Front of Us film series, Tiara E. K. Gallery, Marfa Live Arts, and the Marfa Municipal Alliance for Dead County Folk Singers were each awarded $2,000 for arts and culture events. Marfa Live Arts received an additional advertising grant of $2,500 plus $500 for the use of the USO. Pat Kesey of the Marfa Municipal Alliance reached out to the Big Bend Sentinel following the news of their grant award to state that the band will not be able to hold the event, a New Year's Eve celebration, as planned, due to the fact they were not approved for their required budget, $7,500. The offer was lower than the grant for our debut 2023 NYE event, and less than 33% of what we applied for, which still would have been a tight budget for a 20-plus musician show with a rented sound system, a bar, and three bands, Kesey wrote. We understand the committee has to spread the money around for other programs that are equally important, but we are sorry to say that we are unable to put an event together like we hosted last year for the budget offered. Council members also discussed next steps regarding the city manager position. Previous city manager Mandy Roan resigned in September. Council then voted to appoint City Secretary Kelly Perez as interim city manager and open up applications in early October. The deadline to apply for the job is 3 p.m. Thursday, November 7th. Baeza said as of the meeting time, he had received 8 applications. Council members and the mayor decided to form a hiring committee, which will meet soon to narrow down applicants before the interview process with the entire city council. The hiring committee consists of Police Chief Gilberto Carrillo, Council Member Eddie Payares advocated for a city department head to be represented, Council Members Payares and Mark Morrison, and the mayor. The special meeting, where council members will interview city manager candidates in closed session, is set to take place at 6 p.m. November 19th. Staff photo by Maisie Crow. Marfa resident Annette Gabriel shows her support for Kamala Harris on Election Day across the street from the USO. The Big Bend Democrats had a tent set up across the street from the polling location where they gave away donuts and hot dogs to anyone who voted. Tri-County support for Trump nudges up. Only a handful of local races were on the ballot. By Rob D'Amico. Rob at BigBendSentinel.com. Tri-County. Donald Trump supporters increased slightly in the Tri-County area in Tuesday's election, in which the former president was elected to a second term over Vice President Kamala Harris. Trump increased his totals in Presidio County from 32.5% against President Joe Biden in 2020 to 34.44% against Harris on Tuesday. In Brewster County, his support went from 51% to 55.54%. And in Jeff Davis County, Trump only nudged up a tad from 60.1% to 60.8%. Without an in-depth analysis into voter turnout, it's unclear whether these increases have any significance. Voter turnout for Presidio County was 46.29% in 2020, but Tuesday's turnout figures were not immediately available. For Brewster County, turnout was 63.86% in 2020 and 62.27% Tuesday. For Jeff Davis County, turnout was 78.08% in 2020 and 74.92% this election. With most county races decided in the March primaries, only a handful of local races were on the ballot. Notable were the 9 Alpine City Charter amendments, all of which passed, with some Fort Davis ISD mail-in ballots uncounted at the Sentinel deadline. Results for 2 at-large seats were undetermined. At the state level, Democratic State Representative Eddie Morales beat Republican Robert Garza with 51.7% of the vote to 48.3%. All results are unofficial until ballots are canvassed or certified. See www.bigbendsentinel.com/election2024 for county document totals and election updates. All counties for Tri-County represented races. State House District 73, Eddie Morales, D, 51.7%. Robert Garza, R, 48.3%. State Senate District 29, Cesar Blanco, D, 174,457. Uncontested, 100%. U.S. Congress District 23, Tony Gonzalez, 62.3%. Santos Limon, 37.7%. Presidio County, national races, county results. President, Kamala Harris, D, 1,288, 65.24%. Donald Trump, R, 686, 34.75%. U.S. Senate, Colin Allred, D, 1,287. Ted Cruz, R, 651. U.S. House District 23. Santos Limon, D, 1,023, 66.4%. Tony Gonzalez, R, 679, 35%. Local races. County Attorney, Blair Park, 1,513. Sheriff, Danny Dominguez, 1,450. County Commissioner, Precinct 1, Deirdre Hisler, 375. County Commissioner, Precinct 3, Frankie Ortiz, 221. Tax Assessor Collector, Nancy Arevalo, 1,499. Constable, Precinct 1, Estevan Steve Marquez, 841. Constable, Precinct 2, Adon Pugi Covos, 702. Brewster County, national races, county results. President, Donald Trump, R, 628, 55.34%. Kamala Harris, D, 530, 42.89%. U.S. Senate, Ted Cruz, R, 2,415, 53.19%. Colin Allred, D, 1,995, 43.94%. U.S. House District 23, Tony Gonzalez, R, 2,576, 59.04%. Santos Limon, D, 1,787, 40.96%. Local races, County Attorney, Marisol Skelton, 2,995. County Commissioner, Precinct 1, James Westerman, 156. County Constable, Precinct 1, Flavio Ibarra, 425. Sheriff, Ronnie Dodson, 934. County Commissioner, Precinct 3, Ruben Ortega, 289. Tax Assessor Collector, Sylvia Vega, 818. Alpine City Charter Amendments. Proposition A, Charter Review, Yes on Top, 2025, 151. Proposition B, Annexation, 1,333, 759. Proposition C, Annexation, 1,800, 306. Proposition D, Wards or Districts, 1,348, 704. Proposition E, City Council Terms, 1,735, 377. Proposition F, Mayor Tiebreaker, 1,798, 291. Proposition G, Vacancy Filling Procedure, 1,744, 314. Proposition H, City Attorney, 1,484, 600. Proposition I, Municipal Judge, 1,264, 818. Marathon ISD Board of Trustees, Place 2, Andy Lewis, incumbent, 105, Philip Mollering, 83. Steve Griffiths, 67. Place 4. Leandra Ramirez, 156. Judy Galindo Briones, incumbent, 92. Place 6. Timothy Roberts, 149. Gonzalo Hernandez, 108. Place 7. Craig Carter, incumbent, 189. Arlene Griffiths, 77. Jeff Davis County. National races. County results. President Donald Trump, R. 659, 61%. Kamala Harris, D. 420, 38.9%. U.S. Senate. Ted Cruz, R. 691, 59%. Colin Allred, D. 477, 41%. U.S. House District 23. Tony Gonzalez, R. 723. Santos Limon, D. 404. Local races, Sheriff slash Tax Assessor Collector, Victor Lopez, 820. County Commissioner Precinct 1, Jody Adams, 206. County Commissioner Precinct 3, John Davis, 205. County Constable, Mike Wright, 781. Fort Davis ISD Board of Trustees, unofficial results with 27 mail ballots not counted. District 1, Ben Wilson, 48. District 2, Brenda Vargas, 56. At large, 2 seats, Julia Hernandez, 137. Tommy Everett, 129. Mac Holly, 125. Tri-County, 83rd District Attorney, Ori White, 5,657. 394 District Judge, Monty Kimball, 5,786. Commissioner-elect plans a historical commission reboot by Rob D'Amico. Rob at BigBenSentinel.com. Presidio County. When County Attorney Rod Pontone, who has for years been recognized as chair of the Presidio County Historical Commission, showed up for a commission meeting he set last Thursday at the courthouse, no other members except Robert Arbor were present. Without a quorum, Pontone was forced to reschedule the meeting. But he was then confronted by outgoing Precinct 1 County Commissioner Brenda Bentley and Precinct 1 County Commissioner-elect Deirdre Hisler, who told Pontone that the meeting hadn't been posted properly and that his informal method of appointing commission members did not follow state law. Therefore, his commission did not exist. Pontone posted the meeting on paper on the courthouse doors for 1:30 p.m., but then later emailed his commission members that it was being moved to 2:30 p.m., potentially an illegal change. Hisler told Pontone that the commissioner's court is going to reboot the body and officially appoint new members in January 2025. State law says a county may appoint a historical commission, and if it does, it should be composed of at least 7 members with 2-year terms who are appointed by a county's commissioner's court every 2 years in odd-numbered years. That would be this January. Hisler said most of the people currently serving on the commission were appointed in 2020, and their terms expired in 2022. The Historical Commission has been operating somewhat informally, but that's the way it has been for a long time, Pontone said. It's just informally under my leadership, and we'll be prepared, and we'll present bylaws for approval, and start handling things in a more formal manner. Under Pontone's leadership, a variety of members attend meetings, sometimes being formally recognized as commission members, sometimes just as interested citizens. Pontone said Hisler doesn't have any authority to make the statement she did at the canceled meeting. She doesn't have any business over the commission or the bylaws or anything like that, other than trying to impose her will over everything, Pontone said. Mona Garcia, who has also served as the chair, or what Pontón and Garcia call the president of the commission. In the past, she said she agreed with Pontón that the body has operated in good faith, has done good work, and was not trying to exclude anyone. Pontón noted that the commission submitted two historical marker applications to the Texas Historical Commission, THC, that were approved this year. Cibolo Rock, currently Elephant Rock, near Shafter, and the historic adobe church in Ruidosa, El Corazón Sagrado de la Iglesia de Jesús, the Sacred Heart of the Church of Jesus. Pontón said that THC recognized him as the commission chair, with his approval needed on marker applications. Hisler said that during her campaign for county commissioner this spring, constituents came to her to express concern about Pontón's leadership of the commission and its lack of openness to the community. The issue also came up in a February candidates forum for the county attorney race, which Pontón lost to Blair Park in the March Democratic primary, when a Presidio resident complained of inadequate meeting notices and limited opportunity to give input on historical markers. Pontón told the Big Bend Sentinel at the time that he would strive to be more open by getting meeting agendas posted not only on the courthouse and courthouse annex doors, but also by email to the Sentinel and online. That did not happen, and the Sentinel only learned of the Thursday meeting through Hisler. Pontón said Hisler could have come to him, expressed an interest in getting the commission to follow the law with court appointees, and helped to communicate meeting times. Instead, he said, she got on the August 7th commissioner's court agenda to ask to be officially appointed to gather names of commissioners nominated for appointment in January. While the court did not vote on the matter, Hisler said she left the meeting feeling that she needed to gather nominations because she said that she'll have that power in January to put appointments on the agenda, so she needs to collect the names of those interested now. County Judge Joe Portillo said that making the commission follow the exact letter of state law is not a pressing issue for him, but he understands Hisler's passion for history with her former role in state parks. And if she puts appointments on the agenda in January, he'll be happy to formally vote to appoint them. I haven't given the commission the attention that it deserves. It will eventually be addressed after the dust settles and everyone gets sworn in on the new commissioner's court, he said. Precinct 4 County Commissioner David Beebe said he didn't think the issue was pressing either in August, but now he's completely on board with official appointees in January nominations from Hisler or others, he said. Precinct 2 County Commissioner Margarito Hernandez did not return a request for comment. Pontón said Hisler is trying to replace current commission members for political reasons, not necessarily tied to anything to do with history or how he leads the body. Hisler counters that she, with her long history working for the Texas State Parks and Wildlife Department, understands the importance of following the law, especially since the county works with THC on high-dollar grant projects. Pontón could have easily made the commission more formal and followed the law, and he hasn't worked to try and make the commission more open, she said. I come from a bureaucracy, and so I do believe in crossing our T's and dotting our I's, and you can expect me to serve as commissioner that does that, Hisler said. What is the harm in reaching out to our community to see if people have an interest, which is what I want to do? Pontón and Garcia said they both want to be on the commission moving forward and will submit their names to the county judge for consideration. Pontón previously said many rural counties operate their historical commissions informally without appointments in court. Jeff Davis County Judge Curtis Evans and Brewster County Historical Commission co-chair Elizabeth Lewis said they do formal appointments in their commissioners' courts every 2 years as the law stipulates. Ponton later clarified that most small counties leave the nomination lists up to the members of their current historical commission. Those members seek any other possible members interested in serving, then present them to their commissioners' courts. Evans and Lewis said that's how it works in their counties. Ponton said he planned to bring up the matter of collecting names of those interested in serving at Thursday's canceled meeting. Now, he said he's ready to do that, which leaves interested Presidio County residents in the odd position of submitting their information to either Ponton or Hisler, or both. Hisler said those interested should send her a letter of interest with a resume of their background and how it would fit into the role of a commissioner to Post Office Box 778, Marfa, Texas, 79843, or to Deirdre Hisler, DeirdreHisler, @gmail.com. She said she wants a diverse list of people, all ages and experiences from all over the county, to apply. I want this truly to be a reflection of what the county looks like, she said. On Tuesday, Ponton also decided to make the invitation formal and emailed the Sentinel. Quote, the Presidio County Historical Commission seeks volunteers with a professional commitment to the historic and cultural heritage of Presidio County. Persons interested in serving as commissioners will attend 4 or more meetings a year, may serve on committees, and must be dedicated to preserving and communicating the rich historical heritage of Presidio County. Interested persons should submit a letter of interest explaining their qualifications to Rod Ponton, Chairman, Presidio County Historical Commission. The Presidio County Commissioners' Court will appoint 7 or more members by January 2025 to serve for 2 years. Email information to PontonRod, PONTONROD, @gmail.com. Alpine building official approaches council over zoning ordinance concerns. By Mary Cantrell. MKCANTRELL @BigBenSentinel.com. Alpine. The City of Alpine's building official, Robert Rukas, approached city council members at a meeting Tuesday night to seek clarification on a recently approved ordinance relating to the city's zoning policies and procedures. The ordinance was originally presented to the council on May 21st, after winning unanimous support from the Planning and Zoning Commission, P&Z, with the intent of removing a provision in the city code that provides the ability for the city council or the Planning and Zoning Commission to initiate spot zoning or non-contiguous zoning designation, according to meeting minutes. Spot zoning, a new zoning classification being given to a property that is incompatible with adjacent lots, is illegal in the state of Texas. At that time, Rukas explained to council members that the goal of the Building Services Department was to ensure that citizens were following proper procedures when applying for a potential rezone of their property. Rather than approach council members directly, then potentially make it onto a council meeting agenda, Rukas said the Building Services Department preferred to meet with citizens first to explain the process to them, educate them on what constitutes an illegal spot zone, and collect the required application fee. From there, applications go to P&Z, then to council members for ultimate approval. P&Z is currently updating the city's zoning map to reflect all of the rezones that have taken place since 2013, when the map was last updated. The city is also considering the creation of a comprehensive plan, a document that would help guide future development. At the May 21st council meeting, When council members reviewed the original ordinance, they largely agreed that they did not want to be out of compliance with the state law, but that they wanted to retain power over rezoning decisions. After some back and forth with City Manager Megan Antrim and Rukas, Councilmember Rick Stevens motioned to approve the ordinance as presented, with two amendments to allow for a potential non-contiguous zone in the case that it is either in alignment with the Texas Supreme Court established guidelines or as outlined in the city's comprehensive plan. Council members Regan Stone and Eva Martinez also voted in favor of the motion, so it passed 3-2. The directive to add the amendments was given to the city manager, who voiced her support for council members not limiting their options relating to rezoning given a forthcoming comprehensive plan. The amended ordinance came back to the council in June and went through first and second readings on August 6th and 20th, at which time it was formally adopted. On Tuesday, Rukas, after reviewing council meeting agendas, minutes, and versions of the ordinance, expressed concerns that the council had unknowingly passed a version of the ordinance that did not match their original intent. He took issue with the ordinance initially being approved as presented, yet kicked back to P&Z, assigned a different ordinance number, and the phrase initiated by the council or the Planning and Zoning Commission never being struck out as it was in the original copy. What was presented on May 21st isn't what passed. It was a completely different ordinance, Rukas said. I just want to make sure that what y'all are voting for is exactly what's getting put through. The final ordinance that passed does state that the ability of council members or P&Z to initiate a spot zone is removed with exceptions. The Texas Supreme Court and comprehensive plan exceptions. Council members thanked Rukas for bringing the matter to their attention. They affirmed that their intention was to follow the procedure recommended by Building Services, where the department is on the front lines of rezone requests, but ultimate authority to approve or not lies with City Council. I don't want Council to lose the ability to do a spot zone. I think in rare and extraordinary cases, that might actually be needed, Councilmember Darren Nance said. But that should totally go through the process of starting with you guys. Antrim said the issue relates to an ongoing initiative she's working on to establish standard operating procedures for city departments. City Secretary Gio Calderon told council members that the ordinance adoption was legislatively correct. It's a valid ordinance, Calderon said. Rukas disagreed and said that the ordinance, because it was technically approved as presented, should have been amended but gone on to a second reading. What they initially voted on never got back to them, Rukas said. Calderon said because the change was substantive, a new ordinance number was assigned. He said council members had plenty of time, 2 weeks, to review the amended ordinance and bring up any issues. Rukas said, as a citizen, he is concerned that this scenario had occurred with other ordinances in the past. Councilmember Stone said he believed that the current council and administration is making progress and that he values both Calderon and Rukas' feedback, stating Rukas is the best building official the city has had in a long time. Rukas is the 8th building official in the past 7 years. I'm guaranteeing a lot of bad things have been done in this council, not by this council, but by tons before us. It's been a mess, Stone said. I understand this is getting to you a bit, but the whole point is to clean up the ordinances, help you do what you want to do. Council members did not take any action to rescind or redo the zoning ordinance that Rukas took issue with. Councilmember Nance echoed Stone's sentiments to Rokas for bringing the issue up, stating more eyes is good and hold us accountable for it. This is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, November 7th, 2024. Obituary. Furlong. Lucille Elizabeth Weber, Lucy Furlong, born December 20th, 1973, in El Paso, Texas, died October 24th, 2024, in El Paso. Growing up, Lucy's time was divided between Fort Worth and the family ranch at Kent, Texas. Her pioneer ancestors founded the Long X Ranch in 1885. She attended All Saints Episcopal School and graduated from Arlington Heights High School in Fort Worth. She studied at the University of Mississippi and the University of North Texas. Lucy then completed art history studies in Europe. Upon returning to Fort Worth, Lucy made her debut at the Assembly Ball. A friend to all, Lucy was insightful, compassionate, and witty. Her personality was contagious, with her sparkling smile and zest for life. Lucy married Clay Furlong on May 20, 2000. They settled into ranching and raised two fine daughters, Mary Fruson and Eleanor Elizabeth. She enjoyed travel, life on the ranch, the little house in Pecos, and studies at home in El Paso. Lucy was devoted to her daughters and her husband, as well as her mother, Mary Jo Gutsky Montgomery. Preceded in death by her father, Carl Weber, Lucy is survived by her immediate family, cousins, and friends too numerous to count. Lucy will be greatly missed, but will always be in the hearts of those who have known her. Funeral to be held at 1 p.m., Friday, November 1st, 2024, at First Presbyterian Church. Lucy will be laid to rest beside her grandmother, Mary Fru Reynolds Peeler, as she wished, in Oakwood Cemetery, Fort Worth. Should donations in her memory be desired, the American Cancer Society or a charity of one's choice are appropriate. City of Marfa steps up to fill nutrition center funding gap. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Tri-County. The City of Marfa is stepping up to fill a funding gap for the Nutrition Center caused by federal assistance funds from the American Rescue Plan Act, ARPA, running dry. The Marfa Nutrition Center is run by the city out of the Marfa Activities Center. The center serves meals to qualifying seniors in the community, currently 105 total clients, 77 who receive home delivery through Meals on Wheels, and 28 who receive meals in person. The Nutrition Center is funded by the city, in addition to the Rio Grande Area Agency on Aging, a division of the Rio Grande Council of Governments, RioCOG, which essentially pays the Nutrition Center for the meals it distributes. Recently, ARPA funds, pandemic era relief funds handed down from the federal government, awarded to the RioCOG, roughly $1,300,000 in 2021-2022, have run out after being spread across multiple years' budgets. The funding shortfall has led to a freeze on new clients being added to RioCOG-supported senior programs, including meal programs, in-home provider services, and transportation services, commonly referred to as TRACS. Before, new clients could be added on from wait lists when space became available. At this point, now the waiting list or interest list that has been started is just that. Because I don't want to ever cut people off of the program, said Yvette Lugo, director for the Rio Grande Area Agency on Aging. The only way to reasonably operate is to sustain those that are already participating in the program and not cut them off. Marfa Mayor Manny Baeza, who sits on the RioCog Board of Directors, recently heard Luga's appeal to local government officials to help cover the costs of new clients, if possible. Baeza brought the matter to city council members last week. Marfa Nutrition Center Director Mark Rodriguez told council members there are currently around 15 to 16 people on Marfa's waiting list. Baeza said it will cost the city around $10,000 to make up for the loss of federal funds this year to bring those individuals off of the waiting list, something he advocated for considering the important role of the center in the lives of local seniors. We can always make budget amendments. I just wish I would have had this information prior to the budget, Baeza said. We can cover these costs. I don't want anyone to go hungry. The clients are happy, he added, and those that are homebound, this might be their only contact they have during the day. Rodriguez, who used to operate beloved local Tex-Mex restaurant Mondo's, agreed the services the Nutrition Center provides go beyond a hot meal, including wellness checks and valuable interactions with the community. In addition to regular Nutrition Center clients, Rodriguez and his staff also serve walk-ins. He joked that the room is always full on days they make brisket. Council members agreed to fund the $10,000 cost of adding all of the waitlist clients to the program and unanimously approved the budget amendment. Other local Nutrition Centers impacted include the Sunshine House in Alpine and the Presidio County Nutrition Center. It is not yet clear what the future of assistance for these programs will look like long-term, Luga said. The RioCog is exploring the possibility of creating a nonprofit to support the organization's needs that would be able to fundraise and solicit donations. But it is also possible that the responsibility for keeping these programs afloat could fall on local governments that are housing them, she said, especially if federal support continues to stagnate as it has recently. We're going to have to start looking locally, Luca said. I feel like it's the wave of the future, unless there's additional dollars that are allocated. Obviously, that all depends on the administration that's in place, whether social service programs for older adults are an important piece of the national budget.
Alexander celebrates 95th birthday. Longtime resident Milton Alexander's family put together and pulled off a surprise birthday party honoring his 95th birthday. The party, held at the Ward County Event Center on Saturday afternoon, was a complete surprise, which was a huge accomplishment considering it's normally him who is being the practical joker, and was attended by his family and lots of close friends. The partygoers dined on sandwiches and all the trimmings, fruit trays, cheese balls, assorted snacks, two birthday cakes, and sherbet punch. Milton Hugh Alexander Jr. was born October 31st, 1929, in Ranger, where he spent his growing up years. Milton came to Monahans in 1948. He was in between jobs at the time in McKamey and came to Monahans with his parents and got a job working for Conrad and Buddy Dunnigan at the Coca-Cola Company, where he worked for 24 years. Milton also put in time as owner of the Corral Drive-In Theater, a welding teacher, welding business owner, and on to being a gate guard for Total Sand Solutions sand plant at the age of 90. Nowadays, Milton and wife Diane spend time at the Ward County Senior Center for lunch on most days, dances at the center, as well as other various senior center happenings and trips. Through his lifetime, Milton has had many different jobs and experiences and watched his family grow. Milt has four children, seven grandchildren, 10 great-grandchildren, and two great-great-grandchildren. grandchildren. Man allegedly tries to evade arrest by climbing on roof. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Monahans man is facing a third-degree felony evading charge after he climbed onto a roof while allegedly trying to flee law enforcement and avoid arrest. The incident occurred last Thursday, October 24th, when deputies with the Ward County Sheriff's Office were patrolling near Spur 57 and FM 1927 near Paiute and saw a man on private property. Around 5 p.m., deputies noticed a man coming out of some property owned by the University of Texas. The deputy recognized and was able to identify the suspect as 42-year-old Eric Porras Yanez of 607 East A Street. Quote, the deputy approached Yanez and advised him he was under arrest for trespassing. Yanez told deputies he was just trying to get to his girlfriend's house, and while trying to detain him, Yanez was able to get out of the deputy's grip, Chief Deputy Rodolfo Ozuna said. Yanez then fled on foot northbound across the railroad tracks toward the 200 block of Dooley Street. Deputies staged a perimeter around the immediate area of where Yanez was last seen running. Quote, dispatch received a call saying Yanez was behind Taqueria shop located at 211 Rogers. Deputies responded to the area and observed Yanez running and jumped on top of the restaurant roof, and he began to run back and forth, Ozuna said. A deputy got on the roof in an attempt to apprehend Yanez, and he jumped off. Quote, after the deputy got on the roof, he jumped off, and deputies were able to place Yanez in custody, he added. Yanez was subsequently arrested and taken to Ward County Jail and charged with criminal trespassing, evading arrest or detention with previous conviction, and resisting arrest, search, or transport. Quote, due to Yanez having priors for evading, his charge was enhanced to a third-degree felony from a state jail felony, Ozuna said. His bonds were listed at $2,000, $10,000, and $5,000, respectively. He posted $17,000 bail and was released. Quote, the University of Texas has a zero tolerance for trespassing on their property, and anyone caught on the property is subject to arrest, Ozuna said. Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, October 31st. Steady early voter turnout in county. The story was written by Jan Cranfill. Early voting in Ward County has been steady with an increase compared to previous elections in early voter turnout. The early voter count as of 8:30 a.m. Wednesday, October 30th, stands at 1,900 votes cast since early voting began last Monday, October 21st. Early voting will continue this week, ending Friday, November 1st at 7 p.m. Anyone wishing to vote early can do so at the Ward County Clerk's Office inside the Ward County Courthouse located at 400 South Allen, Suite 101. Polls will reopen on Tuesday, November 5th for voters who have not yet cast their ballots. On Election Day, the polls will be open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and voters must vote in the precinct where they are registered to vote. Polling place for Precincts 1E, 2, 3N, and 4E will be the Ward County Event Center, located at 1525 East Monahans Parkway. Precinct 4M, Wicket, will vote at the Wicket Community Center, located at 501 O'Brien Street in Wicket. Precinct 4W, in Paiute, will vote at the Paiute Community Center, located at 1108 North Ward Street in Paiute. Precinct 1W, Barstow, will cast their votes at the Barstow Community Center, located at 100 East Concho in Barstow. And finally, Precinct 3S, Grand Falls, will vote at the Grand Falls Community Center, located at 711 North A Street in Grand Falls. Courthouse to get passport photo booth. The story was written by Jan Cranfill. During the Monday morning Ward County Commissioners meeting, the commissioners approved a lease agreement with Innovative Photo for a photo booth to be placed on the second floor of the courthouse. Quote, "We process 80 to 100 passport applications a month. We have people coming from all over the Permian Basin to apply here because they don't have to wait. Odessa is supposed to have a two-month waiting list. The cost for the public to have their passport photo taken at the photo booth will be $14.99. The county will get 25% of that cost," District Clerk Valerie Romo said. "There is a passport fair scheduled to be held on November 8th at the Ward County District Clerk's office from 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. and from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. A passport fair is an open event for U.S. citizens to apply for a U.S. passport without the need for an appointment. Passport fairs provide a quick open-door passport service so a person can get the process underway without an appointment. Passport offices can opt to stay open longer or possibly open on weekends, and passport photos are often available on site. Most of these events are for first-time customers and children using Form DS-11 to apply. Quote, "Adult passport costs range from $130 for a routine passport to $190 for an expedited passport. A routine passport takes approximately 4 to 6 weeks, and an expedited takes 2 to 3 weeks. Applicants need to bring their birth certificate and a state-issued form of identification. If they are from out of state, they need the birth certificate and two forms of their state identification," Romo said. In other matters, the commissioners also approved the renewal of an agreement for commissary products and services at the county jail. The county will receive 32% of sales from the commissary products, an increase from the previous 30%. The court also approved the holiday calendar and all predetermined meetings scheduled for the 2025 calendar year. The court meets on the second and fourth Monday of the month, unless a holiday falls on that Monday, and then the meeting is moved to Tuesday. In regular business, the commissioners approved the past meeting's minutes, the budget amendments, paying the county bills, the officer's report, and the treasurer's report. All the commissioners were present at the meeting: Tino Sanchez, Precinct 1, Larry Hanna, Precinct 2, Dexter Nichols, Precinct 3, Eddie Nelms, Precinct 4, and Ward County Judge Greg Holly. The next regularly scheduled meeting will be at 9:30 a.m. November 12th at the Ward County Courthouse, 400 South Allen. Individuals who would like to address the court to ask questions or inform the commissioners of problems in their precinct or Ward County can call Judge Greg Holly at 432-943-3209, discuss their question or concern, and ask to be placed on the agenda for the next commissioners' meeting. Shining Star Award, QA Report, Top Hospital Meeting Thursday. The story was written by Jan Cranfill. Shining Star recipient Sam Escamilla, who works as a PRN, PRN stands for Pro Se Nada, which is a Latin phrase that translates to as needed, or as the situation arises, was honored at Thursday evening's Ward Memorial Hospital Board meeting. Shining Star Awards are presented quarterly to a staff member who has been nominated by co-workers as doing an above and beyond performance of their duties. Some of his co-workers said, "Sam demonstrates customer service with every patient." Another commented, "He shows a lot of initiative and goes above and beyond." They also said he demonstrates exceptional service to all, and his care for patients, dependability, and flexibility are appreciated. Escamilla was presented with a framed Shining Star Award, and he gets his own parking spot to use for this quarter. The Quality Assurance and Performance Improvement Report was presented to the Ward Memorial Board of Managers by Chief Nursing Officer Ian Ray. Quote, "This quarter has been outstanding. We are up in almost all areas. Many of our areas have reached 100% according to patient feedback. Emergency room waiting has been cut down to minutes rather than hours. We have also started offering patients a menu choice while they are in the hospital. We are doing better in the clinics, too. The wait times are down in the waiting room and exam rooms. We are working hard to improve all our services for the comfort of our patients," Bray said. The board approved paying the accounts payable, which included Thursday bills 10-17 for $40,245, Ward County Payroll Fund 10-25, totaling $390,000, payroll deducts 10-25, amounting to $149, retirement $5,271, Monday bills for $321,000. The board also approved the credentialing appointments for several employees. WMH Administrator and CEO Leticia Rodriguez gave an update on the renovation progress. Quote, "The painting and tile work is almost done. The installation of the flooring should be finished in about 2 weeks, and shower curtain supports are being installed," Rodriguez said. A closed session with the hospital attorney was for discussion only and required no action taken by the Board of Managers upon returning into open session. Present for the meeting were board members Lisa Stewart, Frank Heslin, Angel Fuentes, John Fawcett, Jeff Burdick, Boyd Barron, and Leticia Rodriguez. Gerald Carlson and Mickey Mitchell were absent from the meeting. The next board meeting will be at 6:15 p.m. on Thursday, November 7th, at the WMH Physical Therapy Cardiac Unity Boardroom at 420 South Ike. Anyone who would like to address the board about any concerns needs to contact Rodriguez at 943-2511, extension 176, to explain their concern and ask to be placed on the next board meeting agenda.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.